With fall in full swing, more moments call for more comfort. Mack Weldon's got you covered with comfortable, easy-to-layer clothes designed for cooler days and timeless style. Their new Ace line, inspired by their best-selling sweatpants, combines everyday comfort with long-lasting, confident looks you can count on. For over a decade, Mack Weldon has designed timeless, innovative menswear to help you move through the day with confidence. With the new Ace line, looking effortlessly sophisticated this fall is easy and comfortable. Stock up on crazy cozy sweatpants, shorts, and sweatshirts that elevate your style. They even have blazers, if you're lucky enough to grab one while they're in stock. Mack Weldon balances classic pieces with updated details to keep you looking sharp, not flashy. Just classic, always in style, and made from the world's most comfortable performance materials. Fall into comfort with Mack Weldon's Ace Collection. Go to MackWeldon.com and get 20% off your first order of $125 or more with promo code MAC25. That's MackWeldon.com, promo code MAC25.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
You're listening to Football Full Circle with Scott Wetzel and Ben Stevens.
We are live right here on Football Full Circle, and what a day it was yesterday. Around the National Football League, it was Halloween, and things got spooky for some, scary for others. It was deadline day around the NFL, the trade deadline at 4 p.m. Eastern time, and there was a flurry of moves prior to the deadline. And then one, Scott, that was a move after the deadline as well in the overnight hours out on the East Coast, 1 a.m. Eastern time. Not a trade, not a transaction, a firing. He is Scott Wetzel. I am Ben Stevens. Thank you for joining us here on Football Full Circle. And Scott, let's not bury the lead. The Raiders make the first coaching move of 2023. Las Vegas has now fired Josh McDaniels. Again, overnight hours, 1 a.m. Eastern time, this news broke. 10 p.m. out there in the desert, so I guess it was still Halloween in Las Vegas, but Josh McDaniels' time, Scott, at the helm of this Raiders organization comes to a close after about a year and a half, only 25 games as the head coach in Vegas.
Amazing, Ben. Somewhere Rick Pitaccia is laughing, right? Or crying. I'm not sure which, because he's the only guy that's really had any kind of success over there as he took over for John Gruden, led him to the playoffs a couple of years ago, 9-7, you know, doesn't get the job, and it's really been just down the drain since. We pointed it out yesterday. After he started 6-0 with the Broncos, Josh McDaniels is 14-33 as a head coach, 18-29, not that it matters, but against the spread. I mean, it's been a failure, just a colossal failure. Players gone, quarterbacks gone, wide receivers all disgruntled, running backs disgruntled. I mean, it's been an embarrassment with the Raiders.
Yeah, absolutely so. And Scott, you're right. He was fired at this time in Denver after week 13 of his second year there. At least he saw 33 games as a member of the Denver Broncos. Here, Scott, only 25. His overall record in his 53 as a head coach, 20-33. He has struggled mightily as a head coach in the National Football League, Scott, and in both stops he has made at the helm of two AFC West organizations. He has been fired before the conclusion of his second year as the head coach. Scott, he only saw 28, excuse me on my math there, but just 28 games in Denver in the Mile High City, and 11-17 record. His win percentage there, .393, with Las Vegas got .360, a 9-16 mark as the head coach in Las Vegas. 6-11 in the opening year, and after the opening year, as some called for the seat to get warm in Las Vegas for Josh McDaniels, Mark Davis, the owner, taking over for his father, Al, of course, following his father's death, he said, "Do not worry. Josh McDaniels is our guy for now and for the foreseeable future," for that only to change after just 8 games in 2023. And it was abysmal on Monday night in the Motor City. It had been the story of this year for the Raiders, an inept offense, Scott, that has scored 21 points just once, and that was their highest scoring total of 2023. So after a 9-16 record, 3-5 this year in Las Vegas, Josh McDaniels is no longer the head coach.
It's amazing. You know, and you said it, Ben, as far as the timing of it. That's what's bizarre. One, you know, they do have a bye, you know, albeit 3 weeks from now at the end of the month, but they're 3-5. They're not going anywhere. You know, do they have to do it like this week? Why not just wait until the bye week? Two, you're doing it basically midnight on, oh, by the way, the day in which the trade deadline was. So yeah. Does that mean Davis, who fired the general manager, oh, by the way, as well, does that mean he's ticked off at the GM because no trades were made? You know, the head coach gets fired because the team isn't any good, but they throw the offensive coordinator under the bus as well. He gets fired.
Yeah.
I mean, you just cleaned complete house, Ben, and at basically midnight at 10 o'clock, 11 o'clock your time on the deadline for making trades. It's just bizarre, right? I mean, the whole thing is bizarre. Wow. Something, you know, a challenge to the reporters who cover the Raiders. There has got to be something else going on behind the scenes for this to happen like this. It just has to be.
And Scott, you mentioned Rich Bisaccia, right? Taking over as the interim head man. He was in the running maybe to become the head coach before Mark Davis hired Josh McDaniels. Now, Mark Davis didn't fire John Gruden because of performance issues, but of course it was the investigation by the National Football League into those leaked emails that led to John Gruden's dismissal. But this is not all that infrequent for the Raiders as an organization. Antonio Pierce, Scott, who will be the interim head coach, the linebackers coach in Las Vegas, of course, a longtime linebacker during his playing days, which seemed not all that long ago, with the New York Giants. He will be the 12th head coach in an interim or permanent capacity for the Raiders in the last 20 years. It is by far, Scott, the most head coaches at that position in the National Football League in that span. Before I pitch it back to you, Scott, let's make sure we bring in our SiriusXM audience here. Channel 159, SiriusXM, channel 159 is the home for Sports Grid Radio on SiriusXM. He's Scott Wetzel. I am Ben Stevens. We are recapping the news that came in overnight. Josh McDaniels fired as the head coach out in Las Vegas. And Scott, that is the story for the Raiders. Ineptitude at the head coaching position, so many sweeping changes, and very, very little success over these last 20 years because you bring in the 20-year time frame from the early 2000s when they last reached the Super Bowl. That is how bad things have been for the Raiders, and it seems is where they are trending this year as well.
Yeah, and now they have no direction, right? Just they don't have a head coach. They don't have a GM. They don't have an offensive coordinator. They got an assistant GM that's acting as the GM. So he's got to be looking for a job, right? Realistically, I mean, unless he really thinks for some reason he's going to get the nod. But otherwise, you know, all these interim guys, people don't appreciate that, Ben. Yeah, you're named interim, but you know your time is probably up as well in just a couple of months. So are you really concentrating on the job you're doing, or you call people up and looking for your job for next year? So what a just a mess, just a complete mess. I mean, Josh McDaniels, I don't know how a guy can have so much success at one program. Maybe it is just Tom Brady. Maybe that's it. But, you know, some guys are made out to be assistant coaches and other guys are made out to be head coaches. And it just appears that McDaniels, I mean, for the moment he got there, Ben, if you watch Raider games, you're scratching your head saying, what are you doing? You know, you're going for a field goal down 4 with 2.5 minutes left. You know, goofy things like that. It's like you just should not be the main man on the sidelines.
No. Certainly so. And I think, Scott, we've learned that Josh McDaniels, the head coach in the National Football League, is not going to work. That experiment has failed. An offensive coordinator who can design a scheme and an offensive game plan, sure, maybe one of the best in the National Football League, even after the Tom Brady days in New England. And believe me, the Pats have been looking for an offensive coordinator to provide some sort of spark the last few years, and certainly this year in 2023. But the head coach, Josh McDaniels, no. But should we be all that surprised, Scott? And that's the conversation we're going to have next year as we look back on what the Raiders have done, what they might do, and what this all means. The Raiders have had 2 winning seasons in the last 21 years since they last made the Super Bowl in 2002. That is how hard things have been for this Raiders organization. We'll break it down up next, live right here on Football Full Circle.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24-7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
Here's some brutal truth. You can listen to Sports Grid for strategies, odds, and more and live the good life. Or you can dig out the change from your sofa cushions. Ooh, sticky. We told you it was brutal. This is the Sports Grid Radio Network. You're listening to Football Full Circle with Scott Wetzel and Ben Stevens.
We are live right here on FFC. It's Football Full Circle, all a part of the Sports Grid Radio Network and Sirius XM Channel 159. He is Scott Wetzel. I am Ben Stevens. And Scott, this is a story for the Las Vegas Raiders that goes beyond Josh McDaniels. There is the individual that was the first head coach fired this year in the National Football League. But as we said, Antonio Pierce, the linebackers coach in Las Vegas, who now steps in as the interim head coach in place of McDaniels, will be the 12th head coach, either interim or permanent, in the last 20 years for Las Vegas or the Raiders organization, who, Scott, made the Super Bowl back in 2002 when Bill Callahan was their head coach. Since 2002, in the last 20 plus years, the Raiders have had two winning records above 500, and in both of those years made the playoffs and lost in the wild card round. Scott, the Raiders are a big brand. The Raiders have a devout fan base, but in terms of success on the gridiron, the Raiders are anything but just win, baby, which is what Al Davis, their original owner, of course, had coined.
Yeah, and there's really no light at the end of the tunnel, right? Who would want that job? You know, when you start looking at, you know, what they have and what they need and everything, you know, they really don't have a quarterback. I love Jimmy G, but that's obviously not working. You're probably going to lose Josh Jacobs in the offseason. Davante Adams wants out. I mean, boy, what is the appeal? And you're in a division that you're going to know that the Chiefs and the Chargers, anyway, are going to be really good for the next few years. I mean, that is a tough, tough spot. Unless you just bring in another young guy. I was thinking, just speculating, having some fun. How about Josh McDaniels go back to New England and flop, you know, make a little trade. Bill O'Brien, you know, some success with Houston. I know things kind of fell apart there late, but he has some success. You know, maybe they make a switch there with McDaniels going back to New England and O'Brien going to the Raiders. But otherwise, yeah, it's not a good situation. Boy, I didn't realize it was that. I know they haven't had a lot of success, but I didn't realize it was only 2 out of 21 years. I mean, we're talking about like rock bottom, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, wow, such a, you know, I'm old enough, you know, and you're smart enough to know, you know, this Raiders franchise was one of the best in the NFL. You go back to the old days, you know, I mean, man, it was just, it's hard to picture this team being so bad for so long, but that's the case.
Yeah, it really is, Scott. And again, the Raiders are such a strong brand. And Scott, even recently, with Rich Bisaccia as the head coach, the Raiders won the tie game and got into the playoffs because of it. And then the offseason after that, after such a tumultuous year for this Raiders club, they get Davante Adams, the best friend of Derek Carr from their Fresno State college days, to join them in Las Vegas. Chandler Jones joins them defensively to pair alongside Max Crosby. There seemed to be optimism after proven success got one of those two winning seasons in the last 21 years and a playoff appearance. There should have been optimism and expectation for the Las Vegas Raiders. They went 6-11. There were questions about Josh McDaniels at that stage, and of course, those questions have been answered. And Scott, I'll just finish with this. We touched on it briefly, but I don't think Josh McDaniels should be a head coach any longer in the National Football League. Some people are not built to be the overall commander and organizer of the entire operation. Some people are brilliant football minds that are very, very good on one side of the football, or not having to delegate, or not having to be the overall manager of everybody. To me, that is Josh McDaniels. I think if you hire him as an organization to be the head coach, you are making a mistake. As an offensive coordinator, go out and grab the the guy right now. I'm sure he's already talking to Bill Belichick in some form or fashion to get back to New England, because the Patriots desperately need the head coach and the OC back together. But as a head coach, Scott, when you are 20-33 overall with a .373 win percentage, and in that span you have been fired both times in both organizations before the completion of your second full season, that's not a head coach that really provides the promise anymore. The tail of the tape is there, Scott, in my estimation. If I'm Josh McDaniels, I'm focusing solely on becoming an offensive coordinator or working on an offensive staff once again.
Yeah, and you know, now that the pendulum has started here, right, who's going to be the next guy? Everything, Ben, we're saying about Josh McDaniels, to me, we could be seeing in a couple of weeks about Brandon Staley. Yep. Same exact thing, you know. His 1 year as defensive coordinator with the Rams, they go to the Super Bowl, shot up success as an assistant, blah, 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 blah. He's been head coach now of the Chargers for a couple of years, and they're just as bumbling and stumbling and incompetent and embarrassing to watch as the Raiders are. Same, they're 3-4, a couple of tough games, I guess, at Jets, Lions coming up next. I mean, can't you see? And like I said, not so much whether he's fired or not. You know, Chargers will figure that out. But everything, like I said, we're saying about McDaniels and not being able to get it done on the sidelines, that's exactly what I see in Brandon Staley with the Chargers.
Yeah, absolutely so, Scott. I think the Chargers are one bad loss away from the conversation flipping back to how much longer does Brandon Staley have, and it might be that one loss. Had they lost to the Bears somehow, some way, obviously they did it. It's revisionist history. They won and even covered as a 9.5-point favorite. Had they lost to the Bears, that conversation would have been amplified. Maybe Brandon Staley would have been the first head coach in the National Football League fired this year, not Josh McDaniels. But Scott, I think the same could be said for Ron Rivera. I think the Riverboat Gambler himself, his days are numbered in the nation's capital for two reasons. One, as we saw yesterday on display in the trade deadline, we'll talk about that in just a moment. But also, as we have a sporadic owner in Mark Davis for Las Vegas, we have a new ownership group led by Josh Harris in Washington, trying to make their stamp, trying to have their own organization impacted in their own way. And Scott, I think we saw that on display yesterday. Again, not only a big day in the NFL because of the firing and dismissal of Josh McDaniels and Dave Ziegler, the GM for this Raiders organization, but because it was the trade deadline and Washington was certainly selling. We were live on air when Montez Sweat was traded from Washington to Chicago for what we found, Scott, to be a peculiar second-round pick in terms of the value given back to the Commanders. And then the Commanders traded away the other edge rusher they had, Chase Young, the second overall pick in the 2020 NFL draft, who later that year in 2020's NFL season would win Defensive Rookie of the Year. But Scott has been much maligned by injuries the last few seasons, only in total 11 games and just a sack and a half in 2021 and 2022. But this year, since he has been back, he has been good. 5 sacks this year so far for the Commanders. He is traded to San Francisco in exchange for a third round draft pick in 2024. Chase Young bolstering an already impressive defense there for the 49ers.
Yeah, I mean, that's a good steal. It's amazing that you got a second rounder for Sweat and only a third rounder for Young. And, you know, it was a very telling thing. We didn't really talk about it because it was overshadowed with Barkley and Jacobs and their holdouts and everything else going on this offseason. But I thought it was real weird, Ben, when they didn't pick up the fifth-year option on this guy. You know,
yeah.
And that's almost an automatic. You know, we talked about that in the Giants, you know, not picking up the fifth-year option on Danny Nichols and how much that turned out to be a mistake. And so it didn't get that much pub, I don't think, nationally. But we're talking about, like you said, rookie defensive player of the year, good, you know, seemingly up to the upside for him is he could be one of the best in the NFL, and they didn't pick up that fifth year, which means he's going to be, they got one more year of him next year, but he's going to be a free agent after that. But this had to have been in the works a little bit, you know,
no
by
doubt.
Them saying, you know what, no thanks for 5 years of this, we've had enough.
Yeah, and I think the injury concern was a big part of that, right? The investment into the second overall selection in the NFL draft to only play 11 games in his sophomore and then his third season in the National Football League had to be a little bit scary. So they tried to recruit some value, as I think they are making some sweeping changes there in Washington. We'll talk about what it means, though, Scott, for the 49ers, because that's a fearsome edge-rushing duo, the former Ohio State teammates in Nick Bosa and Chase Young. We'll break it down next on the other side of the break here on Football Full Circle.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24-7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
You're listening to Football Full Circle with Scott Wetzel and Ben Stevens.
We are live right here on Football Full Circle, the day after deadline day in the National Football League. And the most active team, Scott, the Washington Commanders, but not in buying, rather selling. Montez Sweat makes his way to Chicago in exchange for a second-round draft pick from the Bears in 2024. The 49ers, Scott, send back a 2024 third-rounder in exchange for Chase Young. So, the former defensive rookie of the year for the Commanders now pairs alongside his college teammate at the Ohio State, Nick Bosa, and it will be Young and Bosa already fortifying a good front seven for San Francisco. Scott, the 49ers, of course, have lost three straight games. A lot of the shine from being the most impressive team in the league on their 5-0 start has worn off, but this, a big move for John Lynch and company in San Fran. What did you make of the trade between the Commanders and the 49ers?
I'll say this about San Fran, right? I mean, they are obviously a win-now team, and they do make moves. Right? At the same time last year, you know, who are they picking up? Christian McCaffrey, right? I mean, stole McCaffrey for me. They stole him, you know, away from Carolina, not even giving up a number one pick. And now they get the number two overall pick, albeit a disappointing guy in Chase Young. But you get him for a third-round pick. I mean, for San Francisco, that's almost going to be a fourth rounder, right? I mean, if you're Washington, I actually looked it up, Ed. There's a secret formula. The NFL, it doesn't tell how compensatory picks are determined, what round, but it's a combination of where the guy was, how much he's making, how much he's played, but all these goofy things, right? So I'm guessing Washington would have gotten a third round pick had they lost him, but he had one more year with Washington. But listen, from San Fran's standpoint, listen, they got a little bit of a struggle here, you know, losing three in a row, got the bye, let's make some changes. Defense isn't nearly as good as we thought it would be, except if you get the run, which is forcing teams to throw. So listen, good move, right? I'm not a big Niners fan. I'm not a big, Shanahan fan. I think he's a little overrated, but I like the organization. I like John Lynch because they show the world that they want to win, and they're willing to make moves like this. I mean, getting a second overall pick, he's injury prone, but that's a pretty good move, Ben, to me.
And that's the key component, Scott. It's the injury history for Chase Young, or you wouldn't have had him on the trading block.
Same thing with McCaffrey, though, right? I mean, that's why McCaffrey didn't get a number one. It's not because he wasn't any good, obviously. It's because he's always injured. So keep him healthy.
And so far in San Francisco, McCaffrey has been just that. Hopefully Chase Young can find his footing as well. Again, 5 sacks this year since he has returned to the lineup. And quickly here just on Montez Sweat as well, 5 years now in the National Football League, including 2023, Scott, for the former Mississippi State Bulldog. He has had at least 5 sacks in all 5 years, 6.5 this year, in fact. Again, in the conversation we had about Montez Sweat yesterday, Scott, it wasn't that he's not a good player or a really strong and solid edge runner. It was just the value of what would be pick 33 through 38, we assume, for Chicago. Was that worth it in getting Montez Sweat? Yes, so much cap space to honestly burn through for Chicago, but with the entire draft in your hands, virtually two, probably in the top 5 in the first round with your draft pick and Carolina's in one very early on in the second, not to mention, Scott, if they decide to move on from Justin Fields this offseason, offseason, and he's not the face of the franchise. The draft capital they will get back for that if they trade one of the first round draft picks, accumulating more and more draft assets, the Bears could really have a potential, and maybe that makes up for the loss of that second round 2024 pick at this moment. But that's what was the concerning or questionable thing, I guess you could say, Scott, for San Francisco to trade away just a third rounder for the potential that is Chase Young. I think that's actually a really good deal for the 49ers.
Yeah, that really is. And if you're Washington, Ben, what are they doing, right? I mean, that's a team that, well, you looked at that team on paper, it doesn't seem like they're really that far. And Sam Howell, listen, he's had some pretty good games, right? For realistically being a rookie quarterback. I know he was here last year, but for all intents and purposes, this is his first season really playing. I mean, he showed some potential. He showed some promise. They got good wide receivers. They got a decent backfield. The defense, you know, has underachieved, but they have the names. So you wouldn't think that they would just be saying, you know what, let's flush it all down the toilet. We've had guys complain about we're losing, so let's just empty house and get rid of everybody and start fresh. I mean, in that division, when you got Philadelphia and Dallas, boy, you're really, you know, you're looking at another 2, 3, 4 years if you're Washington. And if you're San Fran, you know, win now. You know, get it before McCaffrey does get hurt. Get it before Young does get hurt, right? I mean, you hope that everything meshes right for the Niners. But I love the fact that they're trying and really not risking a third-round pick. Boy, if the guy stays healthy, I think that's a steal.
Yeah, and Scott, when you're the Washington Commanders, I think the question is, what is next? I don't think Ron Rivera sees 2024 this current trajectory. So does that mean Eric Bieniemy is the coach in waiting? Is that why he went to become the offensive coordinator for the Commanders? I'm not entirely sure. If it's not, would this year do anything to bolster the resume of Bieniemy, who was desperately looking for that head coaching position and the job promotion? I'm not so sure. It's a new era, of course, as Josh Harris and that group has now taken over command of this Commanders organization. But to me, Scott, that was the indication out of Washington. We're getting ready to make a ton of sweeping changes, and let's start now here at the deadline, because, Scott, this Washington team so far this year just having a 3-5 record. They're not abysmal. They've kept it close with the Philadelphia Eagles in both of the divisional games they've played. They're 0-3 in the division, sure, after a disappointing result the Sunday prior against the New York Giants, but it's not like they're the worst team your eyes have ever laid anything on. So it seems to be a sign of the times for this Washington organization as they look to move forward. Scott, we talked about the Raiders. I think one of the guys not happy to not be on the go yesterday, Devontae Adams, probably wishing he could join Josh McDaniels and Dave Siegler, no longer a member of this Raiders franchise, but he stays put. One final bow on that situation, Scott. The Raiders are looking toward the future. They're going to bench Jimmy Garoppolo, and it is the expectation they will start Aiden O'Connell when the Raiders host the New York Giants. What a barn burner that is going to be, at least on paper, this upcoming Sunday out in Las Vegas. Earlier today, Scott, the Raiders were a 2.5-point favorite, still a 1.5-point favorite. What does that say about the G-men? That they will now be an interim head coach, Antonio Pierce, and a rookie quarterback, Aiden O'Connell, making just his second NFL career start, who did not look good in start number one, sacked so many times by Khalil Mack and the LA Chargers, and the Giants are still an underdog against Las Vegas.
That is amazing, right? You're facing a team that's got a new GM or interim, new head coach, new offensive coordinator, new starting quarterback. You're getting your quarterback back, as word in New York is that Danny Nichols there will play this week for the Giants. And you're still an underdog to that mess. I wonder if that played any role in the firing, Ben. You know, because when Garoppolo went out, Aiden O'Connell, who looked real good in the preseason, didn't get the start, right? Brian Hoyer did, and he stunk. And then O'Connell came in and did a halfway decent job. I mean, with Garoppolo struggling, was there a power struggle there? Did the owner, Davis, step in and say, listen, Garoppolo's out and O'Connell is in? And maybe this regime said, no, we want Hoyer in there, or we want Jimmy G still in there? Because they're saying the O'Connell thing is not like a one-time thing. He's going to be starting the rest of the way for sure, barring injury. So I just wonder if that played any kind of role in this sudden move.
Yeah, he got that start, Scott, week number four after Jimmy G went into concussion protocol following the Sunday night game against the Raiders. And again, it wasn't good. He looked a little bit shaky at times. He was coughing up the football. He had some happy feet. I'm a believer in Aiden O'Connell. I thought being a day three draft pick was perfect for a guy that I thought was just going to continue to be a veteran type of experienced quarterback through the entirety of probably what was a decade-long NFL career. And having these moments where he starts and getting paid for it, but probably being that career backup, much like a Chase Daniel or even a Ryan Fitzpatrick making his way around multiple teams in the National Football League. Heck, even Brian Hoyer. Aiden O'Connell gets a start earlier, or a chance, I should say, to start earlier than I even expected. Speaking of the quarterback position, Scott, one of the questions we had on deadline day, what would the Minnesota Vikings, do to their quarterback room? Well, the Vikings do make a trade. They get Joshua Dobbs, who was benched earlier this week by the Arizona Cardinals, despite being the starter for the opening eight games of the year. They add him to the quarterback room in Minneapolis, but Scott, for Sunday's contest on the road in Atlanta against the Falcons, it will still be BYU's Jaren Hall making the start. But they do add some experience with Joshua Dobbs there in the quarterback room in Minnesota.
Yeah, it didn't give up a whole heck of a lot, you know, because they even got a seventh round pick in addition to Dobbs and to compensate for the sixth rounder. So, but you know what this does tell me though, Ben, is with the move with the Raiders to O'Connell, clearly Jimmy G was available, and clearly the Vikings, for whatever reason, whether it's salary, whatever it is, but you know the Raiders, you know, if they were asked about Jimmy G, I'm sure the Raiders would have said, okay, he's all yours. Just give me a seventh round pick, give me anything for him, right? And so clearly Minnesota didn't want to do that. I tell you, you know, Dobbs isn't bad. You know, he really is a little bit better than I think, you know, most people thought he would be with Arizona, but I mean, is he really that much better though, Ben, than what they have already? To bring in a new guy and devote the entire offense now to him versus giving it to either Hall or Mannion or Mullins if he's healthy, I don't see it that big of an upgrade.
He's a fast learner. We know that, right? He came off the street virtually in Nashville last year and was the starter for the Titans very, very quickly. The same thing this year. We thought it was going to be Colt McCoy, the veteran, to guide Arizona in the absence of Kyler Murray. And then 3 weeks prior to the season, Josh Dobbs is signed. He becomes the starter day one. More FFC next.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
You're listening to Football Full Circle with Scott Wetzel and Ben Stevens.
Live right here on FFC. So, Scott, after deadline day in the NFL, the question is now what for organizations in the National Football League? Aiden O'Connell gets the start for Las Vegas in a game that will feature possibly the return of Danny Dimes for the New York Giants against the Raiders on Sunday afternoon in Vegas. We just talked about Minnesota going out and getting Joshua Dobbs, a fast learner for sure, probably not within 72 hours. Jaren Hall, the rookie out of BYU, slated to make his first NFL career start on Sunday when the Vikings travel to Atlanta. And speaking of those dirty birds, Scott Wetzel, a change at the quarterback position there as well. Desmond Ridder will be riding the bench. Taylor Heinicke is going to get the start. The Falcons were a 4.5-point favorite earlier in the day, now a 5.5-point favorite at this moment. I'm not sure, Scott, if that's a disdain of Desmond Ridder from the odds market. I would think maybe so. If it's a reassurance of Taylor Heinicke, at least knowing he competes to win football games at the quarterback position despite the ceiling he has, or more of a testament of some rookie woes for Jaren Hall making his first start, albeit on the road in Atlanta.
And that, and maybe the people realize the Vikings didn't go out and go get the Aaron Rodgers light, right? I mean, it's going to be a rookie quarterback. So, okay, now that the trade deadline has passed, you know, they did get Dobbs, but he's not starting. So, listen, Desmond Ridder, listen, he was a third-round pick, so it wasn't a throwaway pick. You know, but I think we all kind of questioned the Falcons, like, handing him the keys to the franchise, right? This offseason, there was some talk, are they going to go get one of these quarterbacks that are coming out? And the Falcons kept on saying, nope, no, Ritter's our guy, and didn't really play well last year, and he really hasn't played well this year, Ben. You know, 7 turnovers over the last 3 games, 4 coming in the Falcons' red zone. They had chances to win all those games. It just hasn't happened, you know. So I don't think they're going to throw him away with the dirty dishwater, as the saying goes, but I do think Taylor Heineke's an upgrade. He's not the greatest in the world, but he's had enough success in this league where I think that offense for Atlanta, they should be able to throw the ball a hell of a lot more or better than what they do now. And they got some wideouts and pits, and, you know, that should really be a very good offense. And right now it's not. So we'll see what Heineke can do.
Yeah, we'll see. Arthur Smith is an offensive mind. There's certainly been some questions for this Atlanta offense this year. Now, 4-4. The Saints are 4-4. They are in a tie for that first place spot. Some other news yesterday, Scott, around the deadline. The Packers sending Rasul Douglas to the Buffalo Bills to provide some secondary help. And in that division, from the AFC North to the NFC North, Donovan Peoples-Jones is leaving Cleveland. He is now a new Detroit Lions. So both the Bills and the Lions, Scott, 2 teams we expect to contend for their conference championships, adding in areas that make them better. Of course, earlier this year, Tre'Davious White went down sadly once again for Buffalo, a guy that has been much maligned by injuries the last few seasons and is one of the most talented defensive backs in the NFL. Well, to make up for some of that, they get Rasul Douglas from Green Bay. And elsewhere, Scott, the Lions adding to their offense here, they get Donovan Peoples Jones back in the state he played his college football, of course, a former Michigan Wolverine.
Yeah, I like the Douglas move. That's pretty good. Again, 3rd and 5th round pick, not too bad, right? You got 2, but still, he could be a big time corner. And you think about who the Bills are going to have to go through, right? If they want to get to the Super Bowl, you know, any number of these teams, or who knows, maybe all of them. You got Ty Hill and the Miami Dolphins. You know, you got Cincinnati Bengals who are going to throw the football. Obviously, Kansas City is going to love to throw the football. You know, the Chargers make the playoffs, they're going to be throwing the football all over the place. So you can never, in the AFC especially, you just can't have too many good defensive back. So Bills have had some issues. I think that's a real good deal. It's a bad sign if you're a Packer fan, right? I mean, I know things have been a struggle this year, but you are in the NFC. You know, a couple of wins, the Minnesota Vikings, right? They were left for dead 2 wins later. Everyone's talking about them maybe making the playoffs. You know, same thing with Green Bay. Just turn things around a little bit, but by trading Douglas, I don't know, that's not a good sign if I'm a Green Bay fan as far as any hopes for this year. You know,
certainly not. They've lost 4 straight games. They are struggling mightily at this moment. Scott, as we go now from the NFL to college football, yesterday the unveiling of the first college football playoff rankings here in 2023. And at number 1 in the first CFP poll, Scott, it wasn't Georgia, who has been number 1 all year long in the AP Top 25. It wasn't Michigan, who has virtually been number 2 for most of this year. It was Ohio State. The Buckeyes check in as the top team in the country, according to the College Football Playoff Selection Committee, in the first CFP rankings. Then Georgia 2, Michigan 3, Florida State 4, Scott, in the final year of 4. Now, the 10th year of this college football playoff format, that's where it stands in the first CFP ranking. Scott, what was your reaction to the Ohio State Buckeyes checking in at number 1 in the country?
Ben, I got to tell you, I am doing all that I can to not just completely explode, whatever phrase you want to use on this selection committee. I don't know if they're trying to show the world, listen, this is why we're going to a 12-team format next year, because we're a bunch of idiots. Because it doesn't make any sense, right? To me, they explained Ohio State's number 1 over Georgia because Ohio State's strength of schedule is better right now than what Georgia is. Okay, you know, they got the 2 wins, Penn State and Notre Dame. No problem with that. But here's where, you know, the people that interview these committee members should be following up the very next question. When the committee chair says that, then explain to me how number 3 is Michigan and not Florida State or Washington. Because, Ben, Florida State has wins over a real good, obviously, LSU team, halfway decent Dookie Pukie team, and I know it's Clemson, but it's at Clemson, and it still is Clemson. That's a pretty good win in my book. Washington, undefeated, like Michigan, has wins over Boise State, pretty good program, at Arizona, which we're finding out is pretty good, and number 8, Oregon. Michigan, though, which is number three ahead of those two undefeated teams, you know how many wins they have against winning programs? Two. Two wins. Michigan's best wins, and this is really all you need to know about Michigan. Their best win this year is against Rutgers. Rutgers, and then you can throw in UNLV. Yet somehow or another, that Michigan team with no good wins is ranked ahead of Florida State and Washington, but then they want to justify Ohio State over Georgia because Ohio State has the better strength of schedule. It doesn't make any sense. It's embarrassing. It's embarrassing how stupid or crooked the voters really are. And I know, Ben, what you're going to say is, well, the schedule's going to play itself out, and what people are going to say. And you're right, it will. You know, Ohio State's going to play Michigan, and Georgia's going to play all these teams. So it's all going to work itself out. But if we can't count on the selection committee in the first poll to make sense, how can we count on them to make sense at the end when we have three or four teams tied for the final spot or two?
Well, Scott, I actually remarkably agree with you, right? I completely agree with everything that you're saying here, 100%, because that's my biggest gripe with the College Football Playoff Selection Committee. 13 individuals led by Boo Corbin, who is the committee chair and the athletic director from NC State. Now, they take off their biases. They take off their figurative and literal hats as they walk into that room to make decisions just on how they're evaluating the country in college football. It's made up of administrators, of ADs, so on and so forth, all around the country in CFP. And often, Scott, each and every year, there's a few changes to who those committee members are. Scott, my biggest gripe with the College Football Playoff Committee is exactly what you reference right there. There is no consistency. There is no staple of the rhetoric that year over year, or even maybe more importantly, week over week, they stick to in their key evaluation metrics of how they put together these rankings. It's clear, Scott, why Ohio State is number one, whether we agree with it or not. As the committee sees it, the strength of schedule for the Buckeyes, 10th best in college football with the two best wins this year out of the group of the top five against Penn State, who is FPI number one, or number five, excuse me, in the country, and Notre Dame, who is FPI number 11, that those two key wins and the strength of schedule for Ohio State give the Buckeyes a better resume than Georgia, Michigan, Florida State, Washington, so on and so forth. So that should be the precedent, right, Scott? In 2023, the College Football Playoff Selection Committee is using strength of resume as their key determining factor. Except that's this week. At the end of October, now into November, will it be the same next Tuesday? More than likely, as we have come to know, no. That is not the case. Because, Scott, sometimes it's the head-to-head. Sometimes it is that strength of resume. Other times it's just strength of schedule and strength of record. Other times it's key victories and who you have not lost to. And that's the issue here. And that is really the concerning part. Because it is individuals. And, Scott, after the BCS era, where it was all derivative based on commuter algorithms, people hated that. They wanted the human element back into college football. We have brought back in the human element. It is 13 individuals making up a small sample group of how college football fans and evaluators feel across the country. So, Scott, you would think that in these week one ratings that has led to Ohio State being number one, the key metric moving forward would be strength of resume. And yes, you are right, people are right. This will play out over the year. Michigan's remaining strength of schedule is best in college football. Georgia has played a cupcake schedule. Their remaining strength of schedule is sixth best in college football. Ohio State still top 15, and Ohio State will play Michigan. Michigan will play Penn State. Georgia plays Missouri and Ole Miss. There's conference championship weekend, and really the only one that counts is that first Sunday in December. But all of them should have significance, Scott, if only to get a peek behind the curtain to have an understanding of how the committee is evaluating a college football season. And in 2023, that would be, at least at this moment, strength of resume being the most important factor, leading to Ohio State being the number one team in this initial grouping of CFP rankings. But as Boo Corrigan, said last night, Scott, to ESPN's Reese Davis, yeah, this is probably going to change again next week. That's the difficult part, I think, as you try to give the committee the benefit of the doubt, to take their evaluation process as, you know, what's the word I'm looking for here? As sanctity, as whatever it might be, as the consistent thing each and every week. Because we can't, because we're not sure if they're going to use the same key evaluation tools in week one that they use in week two, that they use in week three, that they use by the time they put together those final rankings, Scott, that will determine the four teams that play in the college football playoff.
Yeah. You know what I would love, Ben? Listen, we could get a five-year-old to put together the top four teams, right? If all it is whoever's undefeated gets ranked in the top four or five, well, then that's it. You know, again, I'd get a five-year-old to do that, literally. I would love to have this committee come out and say, you know what? This Oregon team at 7-1, they got some good wins. They got road wins over ranked teams, and their only loss is against a real good Washington team. You know what? They're better. I've watched them play, and they're better than Michigan. Michigan's got a know-nothing schedule and even struggled to beat some of those teams. So I would love to have this committee have some character and say, I'm basing it on what I watched on film or at the games, and I think Oregon is better than Michigan despite Michigan being undefeated. I'd love for them to do that, but they never will.
Nope, they never will. Resume will always stack up. And Scott, I think actually yesterday they showed us eye test is not that key metric, because Ohio State, even in their wins this year, has not looked incredibly impressive. But the resume alone, the X's and O's, the wins and losses, meaning more for the Bucs. More FFC up next.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
You're listening to Football Full Circle with Scott Wetzel and Ben Stevens.
We are live right here on FFC. So, Scott, after the first college football playoff rankings of this year in 2023, we have a huge first Saturday in November on the docket. The SEC might be decided on this Saturday. Alabama, LSU in Tuscaloosa under the lights. Right before that, inside Sanford Stadium, it's Georgia and Missouri. The Tigers of Mizzou checking in at number 12 in the initial college football playoff rankings. LSU, those Tigers 14 against Alabama, who is number 8. Georgia, of course, number 2. It's Washington and USC, a top 20 tilt. It's the final time of Bedlam as Big 12 foes, with Oklahoma and Oklahoma State and K-State, Scott, earning the respect of the committee. They're ranked 23rd in the country. They'll get shot at number 7, Texas, in Austin on Saturday. The Longhorns still without Quinn Ewers. So following the college football playoff ranking, Scott, through the final month of this college football regular season, now the intensity picks up.
Yeah. Little disappointed, too, as an Irish fan, that Notre Dame was ranked 15. They're ranked a little bit higher than that in the AP and the coaches poll, but they are the number 2 two-loss team. LSU with 2 losses ranked just ahead of them. As I mentioned before, yeah, you know, all you have to do is basically just go undefeated teams, 1-loss teams, 2-loss teams. A 5-year-old could do it. But yeah, this is now it gets down to the nitty-gritty, right? You know, who's going to make their move? Which teams are going to fall by the wayside? You'd be surprised. You look at some of these teams' overall records, not good. But then when you look at the divisions of these conferences, you know, the Minnesota Golden Gophers of the world, you're like, you know what? These teams could, everything falls the right way, these teams could be playing in the conference championship. So SEC should be a lot of fun. Should be a lot of fun. This week, a
huge Saturday in the Southeastern Conference. The Crimson Tide, a 3-point favorite against LSU. The Bulldogs of UGA, a 15.5-point favorite against Missouri. He is Scott Wetzel. I am Ben Stevens. That does it for us today here on Football Full Circle. But don't you worry, we're back tomorrow, starting at noon Eastern time, live right here on Sports Grid Radio. We'll talk to you then.